listening to KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9, Salida, Colorado. And tonight, well, and we're streamed on the internet at khen.org, and Truth Quest programs are archived at www.gimmesometruth.info. And we also have, if you have any questions for the guests, we have a khen.dj@gmail.com email address, so you can send in questions that way. And tonight I have my co-host back, Dr. Eric Carlstrom, a professor of geography at California State University at Stanislaus with nearly 30 years of teaching experience. His academic research has focused on using ancient soils, paleosols, and landforms as a means of reconstructing climates and environmental conditions of the past. And I want to say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. But tonight we have a special guest, Michael Murphy, and he has created a film called What in the World Are They Spraying? And he's a journalist, political activist from the Los Angeles area who focuses on issues that go beyond the interest of the corporate mainstream media. Gentlemen, are you there? Okay, I've got my guests on the line now. Eric and Michael?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, great.
No, I can't hear you very well. Michael.
Well, I can hear you. I can hear both of you well, so
yeah, I can.
It's an improvement.
And Melody, could you say something?
Okay, over-modulates when I'm talking now, so I'm trying to not... Are you hearing me at all?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay.
Yeah, I can hear you great.
Okay, great. Sorry about the little bit of rocky start here, but I don't know what... Sometimes things just kind of happen. And, okay, I've already introduced Michael Murphy, who has made the movie What in the World Are They Spraying? And I'm going to go ahead, Michael, and let you tell us a little bit more about yourself, because I did say you're a journalist and a political activist from Los Angeles area whose work focuses on the issues that go beyond the interest of the corporate mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to fill us in a little bit more, or is that suffice?
Well, that's pretty much it, but I'm also a filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I just partnered with the world-renowned documentarian and author G. Edward Griffin, along with Paul Wittenberger, who's another filmmaker, to produce What in the World Are They Spraying, which is a feature film documentary on the issue of geoengineering, also called chemtrails. So I went out and we investigated this, and we found a lot of very terrifying things that were happening right above us in our skies.
Well, I think this is great, Michael. You know, it's phenomenal. We've had Rosalind Peterson on our show a couple times, and I understand you also were able to talk to her. So we're a little bit clued in on some of the issues here, but it's astonishing given the fact that these kinds of sprayings have been going on over our heads for a good 20 years. That more people are not questioning. Now, there's a lot of people that are concerned. There's a lot of traffic on the internet, a lot of websites, thousands, I believe, maybe tens of thousands, and yet it seems like most people are not paying attention. Would you agree with that?
Well, I would, but I would also want to say, but for the first time in 10 to 15 years, we are seeing a mass awakening because, wow, just in the past couple of years, we've seen a major increase in the aerosol spraying, and people are starting to question it and are becoming open with this. And, you know, I think another reason for the mass awakening is now scientists are beginning to sell these programs to the public under the guise of geoengineering, spraying a chemical layer of toxic aluminum and other particles into the sky to block the sun. So for what they're saying is the stated goal to cool the planet. So now, of course, these programs have been going on for many years. Geoengineers are just now coming public with them and pitching them to the public, stating that no programs have been deployed. However, these are things that they're considering. However, in our investigation, we found toxic material that matched geoengineers' plans, matched patents for aerosol spraying exactly. So we can get into that and a little more about how toxic these chemicals are and what they're doing to human health and also ecology.
Well, yeah, of course, these are extremely important issues. But first, before we get into the health effects and the particulars of the programs that are being used, can you give us an idea of what countries, what parts of the world have been targeted for these kinds of geoengineering programs?
Well, it appears now that we know that it's over every NATO country, and are just a couple countries that are not reporting spraying. I believe Colombia is one of them. China might be another one that's not reporting it, but these are worldwide programs. And I want to get back to the geoengineers who are proposing these programs. They're proposing this on a worldwide scale. So it's literally sprayed over most countries, but it affects everybody because these particulates, when they fall down, they do fall down. Of course, they're inhaled by humans, animals, and then also absorbed by plants, which get into our system. So it literally affects everything. And we can also get into some of the risks that geoengineers were talking about, that being droughts in Africa and Asia, which, of course, they've been seeing in the past 10 to 15 years when they started these programs. So very interesting.
Yeah, that gets into the whole issue of weather modification, some of the synonyms that we've got for this kind of thing: atmospheric geoengineering, weather modification, solar radiation management, chemical buffering, cloud seeding, weather force multiplication, all kinds of headings to explain some of the programs that have been ongoing. Could you give us a sense of what is being sprayed in the atmosphere and why?
Well, yes, I definitely can. And again, I'm going to go back to where our investigation started. It started in San Diego at the AAAS meeting, which had a geoengineering part to it. Geoengineers proposed their models for the SRM, solar radiation management, which essentially were what we just spoke about, spraying aerosol aluminum into the sky. So during this this meeting, they had spoken about spraying aerosol aluminum into the sky and other particles to block the sun. When I got back from the meeting, I wrote an article, which is over on the Internet, called "What in the World Are They Spraying?" about not only these plans and proposals, but also what people were finding in massive amounts around the world. I sent that article out, and it went viral overnight. Didn't know why until a few days after I wrote the article. I broke the story on the use of aluminum in geoengineering models. Aluminum has been found in thousands of times the normal levels in rain, snow, and soil. So, of course, we'll get into how toxic that is to human health and also plant life and ecosystems. But essentially, they're spraying many different chemicals up there. What people have been finding, of course, massive amounts of aluminum, barium, strontium, and then many other particles are being found as well. However, we just focused on those three metals. Why are they doing it? The chemtrail geoengineering issue, it's a multi-agenda operation. Some believe it's part of the HAARP program, which has military applications, also weather modification applications. Military applications could require a certain plasma particulate matter in the sky in order to use energy to essentially continue their programs, and some of the other things we can get into as well, because it appears that there's some links to genetically modified seeds.
Just to clarify for our listeners, I recently visited Rosalind Peterson. She gave me several armloads of things to read. And since I teach climatology, I feel it's my responsibility to try to understand this stuff. But one of the many papers that I've read said there's basically two things that are going on in the sky that would have to do with geoengineering, weather modification, etc. And they include adding chemicals, number one, and number two, adding wavelengths of electromagnetic energy, such as the HARP program. And it would appear that in many cases the two are coordinated. In other words, they add chemicals to the atmosphere to form this ionized plasma, which allows them to actually create areas of intensified energy with the electromagnetic radiation that they send up through HARP and that sort of thing. Is that kind of a generally accurate statement?
I think so. Yeah, of course they deny that these programs even exist, but there's a mountain of evidence that shows that not only are they currently existing, they have been existing for several years. So yeah, the HARP is one theory. Another theory, which I want to bring up, is this could in part be part of a depopulation agenda. And if you look at some of the source data from the Rockefeller Foundation, the Rothschilds, and then Bill Gates, who actually is a heavy funder into geoengineering programs, these families alone have written a ton of documents in support of eugenics policies, which of course is population reduction. And if you look at how toxic aluminum and barium is, then you can kind of make that link. And we believe that it's in part of the depopulation agenda. But then also, in our investigation, we found something that was of a deep concern. When we're up in Northern California, the trees are dying. The farmers are having a real tough time yielding crops. And when the forest started to die, a lot of the scientists up there started doing tests. And what they found was that the pH of the soil was rising. And today, the pH of the soil is 10 times the alkalinity that it was just about 7 years ago. So they've seen a major increase in the alkalinity of the soil.
Now, just for our listeners, excuse me, Michael, just for our listeners, if you have 10 times more bases in the soil or 10 times the alkalinity, that means that the pH would go up one, like one integer from, say, 7 to 8 or 6 to 7. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, it is, but yes, it is a 10 times increase.
It's a logarithmic scale, yeah.
Yes, and that is absolutely toxic to forests and ecosystems. So they started doing some more tests. They started looking at rain tests and snow tests, and what they found, again, was the massive amounts of aluminum, barium, and strontium, and the scientists that we spoke to said those mixtures would definitely increase the pH in the soil. So there's a deep concern because they are seeing incredible die-offs, not only of the forests, and of the farms, but they're also seeing amphibians die, and then the fish, they've seen a major decline in the fish as well. So many people believe that's a direct result of the aerosol spraying.
It's perhaps not a complete coincidence that Bill Gates is the same Bill Gates who has funded the kind of the world seed vault that would preserve seeds for posterity.
Well, he actually has. But he's deeply involved not only with eugenics, but also it looks like he's deeply involved with various GMO seeds. What we found during our investigation, because there's massive amounts of aluminum, we found that there is a new aluminum-resistant seed that can grow very well in this new environment. So a lot of people that we've interviewed really believe that this, in part, could be part of an agenda to literally kill off anything that's natural and organic, so that now farmers are dependent on this new GMO aluminum-resistant seed that can grow in this new environment. So a lot of people are deeply deeply concerned about this and believe that it's all part of this corporate beast that we see emerging with this one world government agenda. So a lot of deep concerns.
I recall a quote from a guy named, I think it's Warburg, maybe the son of Paul Warburg, who said in front of Congress in the 1950s that we will have world government, whether you like it or not, either by consent or conquest. If perhaps they're going for the conquest.
Well, I think they are, because people are starting to wake up, and the people that are waking up don't like their liberties, their freedoms, their natural food being taken away. So, yeah, there absolutely, it absolutely is the agenda called the New World Order Agenda, and we see that rapidly evolving, and, you know, it really makes sense that the chemtrail geoengineering programs are part of this agenda.
If we could go back just a second here, and this is great because I think the food connection is very important. I teach climatology, as I say, and as in Melody's introduction, I've done a good bit of research on climates of the past, and I'm really emphasizing now with my students that this whole global warming thing is a pseudo-scientific bit of nonsense. That humans have not, up till now, had much effect on the climate at all. So we have this enormous public relations blitz to make us think there's a big problem and that it's our fault. So could it? And then I also read that the weather engineers, including many scientists, are now saying, well, Plan A, which is fixing the climate by legislation and voluntary rollback of our carbon emissions, hasn't worked, so therefore we have to try Plan B. And the geoengineers are now touting Plan B, which is the geoengineering solution, which is they're going to fix, quote-unquote, fix the climate by geoengineering. Well, this is, I think, a classic example of problem, reaction, solution, or thesis, antithesis, synthesis. They create a perception of a problem, global warming by humans, which is completely false, and then they propose the solution, and that was we should legislatively reduce our carbon emissions, and then they find out people don't want to do that. So then they create the synthesis or the solution, which is geoengineering. Would you agree with that?
Well, you know, one thing that I do not do, I have deep feelings about the global warming issue. However, I have seen it cause tremendous splits within this movement. I will address it, but not at this time, not until after the film. So publicly, I'm not going to be addressing. But with what you're saying, we do see the what's called the Hegelian dialectic.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Solution with this. And I'm going to go to what David Keith, who is the number three geoengineer in the world. I've interviewed him. He's in part of the film, What in the World Are They Spraying? He said geoengineering is like chemotherapy. Nobody wants it, but if you have to do it, we have to implement it. So like you said, they're selling it that there's this huge crisis, and that they don't want to do this, but the only solution is to put toxic chemicals into the sky to block the sun. Now, some of the risks with these programs are incredible. We know how toxic aluminum is to human health. Barium lowers our immune system. It increases blood pressure and will weaken other parts of the body. We interviewed many physicians and healthcare professionals as well who are in the film. So what they're saying, you know, we might have to do this, and it might kill off, you know, a large number of people in Asia, in Africa, maybe even here in America. However, it will save the majority. So they're saying it's for the greater good of society. And I do not believe that what they're doing is in any of our best interest. It's in the best interest of a select few who call themselves the elite.
I think you have a good analogy with the chemotherapy there, psychologically. And I think it is a psychological operation. And I guess some of the speculation is that that some of the HARP capabilities actually have to do with a mind control and mood alteration and that sort of thing. Have you delved into that?
Well, I have. We wanted to cover it in the film, but let me tell you, we just had time to scratch the surface in an hour and 40 minutes. I'd like to do a second film, perhaps When the World Are They Sprains Part 2, where we go more deeply into weather modification, into HARP, into the mind control. We touch on it, but I want to go a little bit deeper in that. And, you know, yes, there have been experiments where governments and certain agencies have used different energies and pulses and done tests on citizens within mind control. With that being said, when we get sprayed here in L.A., and I know anybody who's aware of this issue, like myself, when we have a heavy spray day, I get very irritable, and I can tell before I even get out of bed if they're spraying us. And then also on the human health aspect, on heavy spray days, any doctor that is aware of this issue will tell you, any doctor, emergency room doctor, when they spray heavily, emergency rooms are packed.
Have you been able to get a doctor to get on the film or anything like that?
We do, yes. We have a couple of physicians in the film who we interviewed about the health impacts of the aerosols that were described and that are being found around the world.
Gentlemen, I just want to say that I've got Michael Murphy, who has made the film What in the World Are They Spraying, and I've got my co-host, Dr. Eric Carlstrom. Go ahead.
Well, if I could jump in, just to kind of broaden the discussion a little bit, my first exposure to this was when I ordered a DVD by Carnicom.com called Chemtrails, which I think he made in the late 90s. And he had done a very, very thorough study of this even in the late 90s, and it had been ongoing there where he lived in New Mexico for at least 10 years at that time. And then there is California Skywatch with Rosalind Peterson has a DVD out called Skylines. The New York Skywatch has a DVD out, I think, called Geoengineering. The History Channel has a special on weather warfare, which talks about some of this technology. And then there are various books that have been written about chemtrails and HARP and whatnot, all of which are for sale. So there is a lot of material out there, and now hopefully your film will also help alert people to take a more kind of proactive stance on this.
Well, we think so, because for the first time in the movement, we've had incredible attention. We got funding for the film in less than 2 days. We hit our budget goals because public support was so good. And if you look on YouTube, What in the World Are They Spraying? Official trailer, we've gotten close to 250,000 hits in just the past 3 months. So not only are we at a very good point in terms of people waking up with this issue, we've just had a tremendous amount of support and following during this project. I think it's because of the approach that we take, and we've looked at it from the geoengineering side. We have geoengineers. We've interviewed geoengineers. We have source data, and we have tests. You know, for the first time, I think we've really put it all together with this. And we also finished the film in Washington, D.C. So I interviewed over 30 members of Congress and senators as well on the issue. So
very interesting. And are they maintaining that this doesn't exist, or are they now acknowledging that it does?
Well, most of our public officials ran from the issue. A couple acknowledged it. Bart Gordon had acknowledged it, blatantly denied that this was going on, just as the geoengineers are blatantly denying that this is going on. I have spoken and interviewed a lot of politicians. Amazingly enough, a lot of politicians who I speak with who are running for office are very open about this. They're aware of it, but it seems like once they get into office, they quit talking. Of course, Dennis Kucinich, had actually mentioned the word chemtrails in his 2001 Space Preservation Act. It was taken off at a later date and passed, or I'm not sure if it passed or not, but
it did not pass.
It did not pass, but it was the word chemtrails was taken off the bill. So we tried to interview him, not a word out of him. Looks like he's not touching it now. So there's, you know, you need to realize, and I think most people do, this is a multi-billion-dollar operation, and it's illegal, and it's hurting a lot of people. So there's a lot of pressure to keep this out of the public's knowledge.
Well, you know, I just rewatched Carnicom's DVD called Chemtrails, and it's rather long, and it gives a lot of information. Somewhere in the middle there, he, very clever guy, he mentions that in the first couple months of when he put the site up, he actually monitored those who went to the site, and then he scrolls down through a list of the entities, the corporate entities and the military and intelligence entities that had hit on his site, and it is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, we're talking the military-industrial complex, we're talking the CIA, the National Security Agency, we're talking the real, you know, the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. Navy, the U.S. Army, all of the real heavy hitters, of course, the defense contractors, et cetera. And the list went on and on and on of these interested parties that were indeed part of the corporatocracy in the military-industrial complex.
Yes, and I think that list is still on his website, so I'd encourage everybody to look at that if there's an interest. Also, geoengineeringwatch.org has reported similar hits on their website from similar agencies. So they're without a doubt looking. They want to know what people know, and I mean that's essentially what's going on.
Well, of course, when you mention the word depopulation, this is a scary concept, scary word. The notion that this spraying might be done in order to weaken and destroy the health and even longevity of American citizens and citizens throughout the world, that's a very scary notion. The idea that maybe we are the enemy now, which of course has occurred to many of us since 9/11. What do you say to people to encourage them to take proactive steps in the face of the possibility that all of us are targets of these military corporate programs?
Well, they definitely are. I mean, there is a group which we spoke about earlier who consider themselves the elite, the Ted Turners, the Rockefellers, the Rothschild family, who have been very public with this, about their eugenics programs. There's a ton of source data out there. However, they're not broadcasting it over Fox News or CNN or the other corporate media interests, but they've been pretty open about this. So if you go and research that, you know, you will definitely find that without a doubt, is part of the agenda. Let's look at the Georgia Guildstones, which many people believe is this New World Order Ten Commandments. One of their goals that is stated on this is to reduce the population to below 500 million, which is about a 92-96% reduction in the population. It's very difficult for a lot of people to believe, but once you look at the source data, you'll find that this is in fact true. So with that being said, a lot of people say, why would they want to lower the population? Well, A, they believe that there is a population problem here on the world, and B, they're looking to control us. And 9 billion people on the planet is much more difficult to control than a nice manageable amount of 500 million. So I do not support population reduction. I'm 100% for life, and I believe in health, liberty, pursuit of happiness, all of the things that my creator had created me and the rest of us here on Earth for. Essentially, there's another group that does not believe in that. They believe in death, control, destruction, other things. With that being said, though, let's look at, aluminum. What we've found in the past 10 years, we've seen aluminum-related illness skyrocket. For instance, Alzheimer's has gone up over 200% in 10 years in L.A. County alone. We've seen other aluminum-related illness literally go through the roof, and we've seen illnesses of all sorts go through the roof as well. When we spoke to the physicians and the other healthcare professionals, they let us know that aluminum, barium, strontium are very toxic, and what it does, because it's accumulative, it accumulates in the body, essentially it will attack the weakest organ or the weakest part. So if somebody has, genetically maybe a bad liver, the liver will go. Or if somebody has, for instance, a weak bone marrow, they could get bone marrow cancer. So it's going to attack the weakest part of the body. And, of course, we've seen illness increase and go through the roof, again, at about the time when we started witnessing these long, persistent trails out of jet aircraft. So,
yeah,
very frightening.
Just a point that's brought up with the New York Skywatchers program on geoengineering is relates to the fact, I can't remember exactly the figure, but they mentioned that most of the spraying is going on at the altitude of military space. Most of these are military vehicles, and I can't remember how many Boeings they said were flying in those areas. But, of course, most of us have seen the spraying, the crisscrossing in the sky, the stop and the starts, even the maneuvers with the contrail, and then how they spread out into artificial high clouds. And even NASA admits that the artificial high clouds have the overall ability to trap warmth or trap heat from the Earth, and therefore warm the atmosphere, warm the climate. And, of course, the whitening of the sky, which Bill Gates apparently has invested in personally, blocks the sun and has contributed or is contributing to this thing called global dimming. And I think that's very of great concern to agricultural productivity, to the fact that many people are not getting as much vitamin D as they need, and therefore there's somewhat of an epidemic of rickets, according to Rosalind Peterson. Which is emerging, and as you mentioned, where the spraying has been very intense, crop productivity and natural vegetation, even trees and chaparral and shrubs, experience quite a dieback. So I guess the point I started to make was the spraying is going on in military space at an altitude of, 30 to 35,000 feet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's also lower. They also spray. They can spray lower down as well. Maybe you could comment.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen them spray very high, but other days I've seen them spray below the cloud cover. So I don't know why. Some of that could be cloud seeding. Some of that could be weather modification, depending on what the agenda is for that day or what the operation is. And again, this is not only one program. This is many different programs that are all under this umbrella of the chemtrail geoengineering issue. So, we see different spraying techniques out here. Sometimes they spray very short, trails for about less than a minute, and they spray those all day, which make a very unique, wispy-like cloud. Of course, we know that they're not at all natural, but I think most people are unaware because they're not looking up or nobody has pointed it out to them. So,
yeah, I show slides of natural clouds, which I took when I was a graduate student back in the 70s and 80s, and I'm starting to develop another slideshow or PowerPoint of artificial clouds, courtesy, again, of Rosalind Peterson, who has actually started to name a whole series of different kinds of clouds that you see in the sky. And I think it's of concern that maybe some of, a lot of younger people would have grown up with these things, so they wouldn't know the difference between a quote-unquote natural cloud and a man-made cloud.
Well, that's absolutely true. However, you also have to look at what the children are being taught. There was a National Geographic website that came through, and they were naming all of the clouds, and they even showed a very long chemtrail, or what we call a sag trail, and they said that was a natural contrail. And they had named all of these unnatural clouds, stating that they were natural. So there has been an infiltration to our school system, and this is what they're teaching the kids.
Wow.
Because they don't want people questioning this. They don't want people believing that these are unnatural. They don't want people knowing that these are damaging. So they are. I mean, they're indoctrinating our children with deception and lies, and it's very concerning. Also, many cartoons now, as we can see, the type of programming that's going on, they're written. They're actually drawn in the back. Chemtrails. And many video games as well. It's very effective, though. The people who are behind this are very clever, and they know that if they condition people, when they're seeing these things on TV, when they go outside, they're not going to question it. So
yeah.
They are very effective, and that's one of the reasons why, 90% of the public still is unaware of these issues that, to those of us who know, are so blatant and obvious.
Yeah, Carnicom's first video on chemtrails, he distinguishes what he would call normal contrails or jet contrails, which are mostly water vapor and which dissipate within a minute or two at the very most in the sky, and what he was calling chemtrails, which can persist for 20, 24 hours, can spread out over thousands of square miles, and create these this high cirrus-like cloud, but it's a man-made cloud. Rosalind Peterson likes to call them persistent contrails because that's what NASA calls them. But there's a big, big difference between what nature used to make as clouds and what we're seeing in the sky now. And I think it does warrant a new terminology, and it's a, I guess it's a battle for perception. If NASA and these other groups have already come up with names for these things they want to teach the kids, I guess it's up to some of us who teach climate to come up with some alternate names that show that they're man-made.
Well, I would hope so, and NASA is part of this propaganda and deception. And again, yes, they're stating now that contrails can persist for several hours and spread out and actually block the sun. I don't believe that. I believe that is deception. These are not contrails. A contrail is condensation trail, and condensation trails do not persist. When you go outside, when it is cold and you breathe and you're walking down the street, your breath does not persist for 6 miles if you go on a 6-mile walk. When you blow out cold air, it dissipates within just a few seconds. So, yeah, I mean, we see this deception, this deceptive propaganda infiltrated through NASA and what, unfortunately, people believe are credible entities, but they're not. And my question, when people cite NASA, my question is this. Why should I trust NASA? Give me a reason why. Is it because they get billions of dollars in funding that they wouldn't be persuaded on a political issue? Is that why I should trust them? No, we need to question everything. And we do within our investigation. We did the testing. We interviewed people. And there is massive amounts of this particulate falling on us.
How many different people?
Undoubtedly.
Michael, how many different people did you interview for this?
Wow, we probably interviewed about 25 different people for this. It was all professionals. We also interviewed Senator Karen Johnson, former Arizona senator who's out of office now. She's well aware of the issue. We spoke to her about why this is not being handled politically and her challenges and when she was in office addressing this. So we interviewed politicians, scientists, physicians, people who have been experiencing health problems. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. And what we found was just shocking.
Yeah.
So what made you?
I shared an interesting story with Melody earlier yesterday or today. One of my students sent me this. Speaking of disinformation, The headline is Retired NORAD Officer's New Book Predicts a Tentative Worldwide UFO Display on October 13th, 2010. This is set as the tentative date for a fleet of extraterrestrial vehicles to hover for hours over the Earth's principal cities. The author says the event is to be the first in a series intended to avert a planetary catastrophe resulting from increasing levels of carbon dioxide in the Earth's atmosphere dangerously approaching a critical mass. Now,
yeah.
I know people have strong feelings on this, even approaching religion, but I have to say that carbon dioxide is the basis of life because it's fundamental to the process of photosynthesis. And we have not increased CO2 very much. We've increased it from about 320 parts per million to, say, maybe 380, and there are many studies that have shown that by doing that, we've perhaps increased the biological productivity, including agricultural and forestry productivity, by about 10%. So this has been principally a benefit. The other thing is, if we look back in geologic history, we see that the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere has been up to 10 to 25 times greater than present in the past, and life has thrived with higher CO2 levels. So the idea of getting us afraid of CO2 as if it's some kind of a pollutant when it's a nutrient and a miracle gas is part of what I would say is the very, very big lie of man-caused global warming. And,
well,
and the fact that they're willing to talk about a UFO invasion to help us protect the planet from CO2 reveals the UFO thing to be a scam as well.
Right, right. We see deceptive propaganda in all walks, and you know, one of the most obvious ones was at the geoengineering conference when they were selling this to the public. Of course, now they're putting things in various movies about geoengineering and why we may have to do it. So they're definitely priming the public. They're definitely starting to sell this to what I would call an unsuspecting public. However, people are waking up to this. Thank God, and people are starting to say no, and that's the thing that they fear. They fear truth. That's what they fear, and truth is coming out. People are now beginning to see that these programs are occurring, and they are beginning to see that these geoengineers and these people that call themselves the elite are using deception, and they're lying. They are beginning to see that NASA, you know, is putting out false data on what they call persistent contrails. And that's a good thing, because for the first time in history, we're now beginning to hold our public officials and our people in office and even our scientific community, we're beginning to hold them responsible. And that's a good thing. So we're starting to see a shift. Unfortunately, you never want to see the deception get, you never want to see the darkness get so dark, but there is a light shining within that darkness.
Michael, have you, Michael, gotten a lot of resistance from trying to make this movie?
Yes and no. There is a tremendous amount of resistant people who want to say that these are just contrails. There's been resistance of people saying this is simply conspiracy. But for the most part, no. We have had so much support. We've had people. We're blessed to have people like G. Edward Griffin get involved. Mariel Hemingway is in our film talking about this. She's a very well-known celebrity. And for the first time, I think in documentaries on this issue, we have the scientific community. We have credible tests, and we have people who are considered to be credible. So there hasn't been the type of resistance that I initially thought. However, the film has not come out yet. go ahead.
No. Well, I was just going to say there's an article by Rady Ananda that came out in globalresearch.ca about atmospheric geoengineering, weather manipulation, contrails, and chemtrails. And it's a review of the Case Orange report. And it starts out, an international symposium held in Ghent, Belgium, May 28th through 30th, 2010, at that conference, scientists asserted that, quote, manipulation of climate through modification of cirrus clouds, which are the high clouds, is neither a hoax nor a conspiracy theory, quote, unquote. It is, quote, fully operational, end quote, with a solid 60-year history. Though, quote, hostile, unquote, environmental modification was banned by a United Nations convention in 1978, its, quote, friendly, unquote, use today is being hailed as the new savior to climate change and to water and food shortages. The military-industrial complex stands poised to capitalize on controlling the world's weather. That's how it starts. And this was a scientific symposium. Scientists are saying, yeah, this stuff is real. They don't think that there's a ulterior motive such as depopulation. They think it's more benign than that. But they do mention that there's evidence to show that Raytheon, one corporation, stands to control all the weather. And they mentioned that one person then could, if that person chose, they would have the power to plunge the Earth into another ice age or glaciation, which actually global cooling is much more harmful to humans and to other organisms than global warming. And in history, global warming periods, and they're cyclical, and there's high-frequency small cycles and low-frequency large cycles, but historically, warm periods like the medieval warm period and the Holocene maximum are periods where agriculture, the growing season is longer, lifespans are longer, more people can live, periods of wealth. And cold periods, by contrast, like the Little Ice Age, about 1300 to 1850, are periods when the growing season is shorter, more disease, more die-off, more population reduction. So cold is much more to be feared if we're going to be afraid of the climate, which is probably not very wise way to use our emotions, but if we're at least be sensible enough to fear the right thing. Global warming is not something to be feared, but global cooling is.
Well, we know that nature has a unique way of balancing itself out without the interference of the naivety of man. I actually spoke at the symposium in Belgium. I went there and interviewed also many of the scientists, as well as Peter Varik, who introduced the casework Orange Report as well. So he is included in What in the World Are They Spraying, as well as many of the other speakers who address this issue. Very interesting people gathered from around the world in Ghent, Belgium. And for a day, we had a great symposium, learned a whole lot, and got an opportunity to document a lot of this, which we'll be able to get out to the world on October 23rd, which is our release date for the film.
Great.
What is your website, Michael, for anybody that wants to see a trailer on this film?
You can see a trailer on www.truthmedia.blogspot.com. Or you can also go to the Reality Zone website, and you can click on the trailer. It's Reality Zone. You can also purchase a DVD. We're now selling them, and we've had a tremendous response. And also InfoWars is selling it on the InfoWars website. Just go to the store, and you can purchase it and also view some of the trailers. Again, the trailers have been very well received around the world. I get responses from all over the world, people that are excited about this documentary. And, you know, I was just blessed to be working with the people that I was working with. Mr. Griffin, Paul Wittenberger did a fantastic job directing and also with the edit for this film. So it's very professional. This is, it's a feature film, full length, and I think it's really going to make an impact.
So this is for sale now on the Internet.
Absolutely, 1995, and we'll go into helping us fund some of the other projects and programs that we're thinking about moving forward with.
Yeah, great. I'm certainly going to get on the Internet and purchase one. That's great to know. And is it going to be opening in theaters, or is it? How are you going to celebrate the opening on October 23rd?
Well, we're going to be in Atlanta. There's a group that's flying us out to Atlanta, and that's where our premiere is. So we're going to have, and I'm going to pull up the information on the internet. We're going to have we have a 400 seating auditorium, which is filling up very quickly. And you can also go to the Reality Zone if you're interested in coming out to the premiere. It's October 23rd at the History Center. Tickets are just $10, and it's going to be a great event. Of course, I'm going to G. Edward Griffin and I are going to be taking questions and answering questions afterwards, and we also have a private reception. So it'll be a great event. You can find that information again on Reality Zone for the premiere, and then also a trailer for the film.
And so realityzone.com, is that where people can go?
It is.
Okay.
Let me just double check. Yeah, www.realityzone.com. You'll see our cover, What in the World Are They Spraying? And just click on that, and you can get some more information and also purchase the DVD.
Great. Let me go ahead and say this is KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado. We're streamed on the internet at khen.org, and TruthQuest programs are archived at www.givemesometruth.info. And if you have any questions for our guests, we've got an email at khen.dj@gmail.com. And again, this evening I've got Dr. Eric Carlstrom, who is a professor of geography at California State University at Stanislaus, with nearly 30 years of teaching experience, and his academic research has focused on ancient soils, paleosols, and landforms as a means of reconstructing climates and environmental conditions of the past. And our guest this evening has made the film What in the World Are They Spraying? And he's a journalist and political activist from Los Angeles area whose work focuses on issues that go beyond the interest of the corporate mainstream media. Okay. Eric, do you have any more questions here so we can...
Yeah, well, perhaps, Michael, I could ask you to discuss a little bit the document put out in 1996 by the Air Force, for the Air Force, called Weather as a Force Multiplier, Owning the Weather in 2025. Is this treated in your film?
It is. We touch on it real briefly because, we're looking at this from a geoengineering standpoint, and then we're addressing the health, environmental implications of these programs, and of course what's being found around the world, NASA quantities, aluminum, barium, and strontium. I'll go into tests in a little bit, but yeah, we actually cover that because it's very important. A lot of people are scratching their head going, wow, you know, I wonder why the weather is so weird this year. I wonder why they're getting torrential rains and in certain areas and droughts and in other areas, and I believe the answer is this. It is an express goal by our military, and there's documentation, as you stated, that they do want to own the weather by 2025. That is an express goal, and they currently are controlling the weather with various modification programs in warfare. I believe that some of the reasons that we're seeing the major changes in Asia and then also Russia is because some of these weapons now, weather being used as a weapon, is being implemented, unfortunately, on these countries right now. So I think it's a silent war right now, and I there's no doubt in my mind that it's been ongoing.
Yeah, this is a wonderful for military because there's complete plausible deniability. They can just say, well, it was nature, but yet the technology now exists for the military to create droughts, to create floods, to create storms, to guide, and perhaps even to engineer and fabricate and start a hurricane. Also with HAARP, the potential is there to direct extremely low-frequency energy along fault zones until an earthquake occurs. Also, again, the mind control potential All this goes back to Tesla technology, which was, of course, Nikola Tesla was one of the greatest scientists of all time. And in the late 1800s, he developed alternating current and many other technologies, which were, you know, many, many decades ahead of his time. And his patents became then the basis for a number of the patents that are used at the HARP facility. And this is a kind of physics that most people are probably not very aware of, dealing with electromagnetic radiation and interference of electromagnetic waves, etc. But perhaps now is a good time to read up on it, because, as you say, they're probably using this stuff right now. There's a weather forecaster in the Seattle area who recently said, listen, all the weather's controlled now. Everything is scalar, and scalar technology has to do with Tesla technology. And he said, whatever happens is allowed to happen now. And this was a very, I suppose you heard that interview, or you perhaps know about that?
I haven't, so maybe you might let the audience know, too.
Yeah.
Well, one of my students, again, it's kind of a blessing to have industrious students. A student sent me this story. It was simply a weatherman on the news in Seattle who had just quit and said, listen, you know, I got to tell you that the weather that I've been reporting on, is not natural anymore. That with the scalar technology, with HARP, et cetera, whatever weather occurs is allowed to happen by humans.
Yeah, I think his name is Scott Stevens, and he does a great job at exposing this. I've been trying to get in touch with him, and hopefully this documentary that we're releasing will promote that. But yeah, there's a joke that we have here in LA, those of us who know what's going on, and when it's raining and we want to hang out at the beach, you know, we say, hey, what should we do? Hey, no problem, I'll just call Raytheon, because Raytheon is right down the street. I'll see what I can do to clear things up, you know? And, it definitely is happening. The weather is being controlled. It's not natural, and it is very damaging. Think about the power. If you were trying to create global governance, and you had a country who wasn't compliant to this, and you had the power to control the weather, and if you wanted to take control of that country and your motives were not good or godlike, wouldn't you be able to create a drought in that country?
Or flood them.
People out, and then say, okay, you know what? We're going to help you out. We're going to provide aid because we're this rich nation that has an abundance of food and we have an abundance of aid. So we're going to help you out. However, you're going to have to give up some of your sovereignty because we don't help people out free. And that's what I think we're seeing is going on. A lot of people are questioning the earthquake in Haiti. U.S. military was, ironically, I heard that they were ready in Florida to do Haiti hurricane relief. You know, unfortunately, the next day they had a earthquake. So it appears that they were already set up to go in there. And, of course, now the U.S. military is occupying Haiti, and a lot of people believe that that occupation was promoted by HARP technology to create that earthquake. And of course, we're seeing massive earthquakes around the world today. And anytime I see that, I always question, you know, what was that natural, or was that part of this new technology that's related to the chemtrails? And I think the answer is the latter. I think it is being used for these military applications.
Well, there's an excellent book by Naomi Klein called The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism, and she kind of traces the history of this idea that capitalists love a disaster because then they can redraw the map as per the way that they will receive the maximum profit. And she traces this back to Milton Friedman at the University of Chicago School of Economics and the Chicago Boys, etc. She talks about the Kissinger CIA coup in Chile in 1973, and how the students of Milton Friedman were right there when Pinochet, you know, imposed a fascist dictatorship. We're right there to redesign the economy along the lines of disaster capitalism and fascism. And she says, you know, sometimes they will take advantage of a natural disaster, but of course, in today's world, they can simply just create the disasters and then go in and redesign the system, such as what we saw perhaps with the tsunami in Banda Aceh, where all the peasants living on those at beachfront property who were washed away lost their land, and the big hotels and condominiums come in to claim the beachfront property. Likewise, Hurricane Katrina moving out many, many, many blacks who were living in homes that were paid for, and now, you know, developers are allowed to come in and put into practice plans that have been on the books for a long time. So I think there's also speculation that Hurricane Katrina may have been guided by some of these technologies.
It appears that it has been, and of course it was a great excuse to get more funding and support for FEMA. So it's drawing a lot of question in my book. It absolutely is. And of course we are seeing these multinational corporations that are coming in and they're getting the rebuilding projects, and you know, I don't think it's only for money. I really think it's about control. And I think it's building up using this technology to create a situation and a crisis for an excuse to build up this military, to build up this police state. You know, also we looked at New Orleans, and the troops were asked to go in, the police were asked to go in and lay down the oath that they took to uphold the Constitution and take people's guns from them during that time. So I think it was a beta test for a lot of different programs that are now being implemented. And it just breaks my heart because that was not the America that I enjoyed growing up, and we're seeing that rapidly changing.
I find it interesting that they use the term own the weather as though it's a resource.
Well, yeah, there's certainly a mentality that humans can and should control the weather and in effect play God. And what's so fascinating to me is this this petition of 31,000 scientists that are suing Al Gore for the global warming hoax, etc. This was the initial signator was Edward Teller, the guy who Dr. Strangelove himself, who invented the hydrogen bomb. And interestingly enough, he as a physicist doesn't believe in global warming, but nonetheless, he and his crowd of Wood and other people at the Lawrence Livermore Lab, who believe that we should be doing this geoengineering, they think that even though that we are not causing a warming, that we still need to go ahead with the geoengineering. Now, this is a kind of a mentality that I, of course, I fundamentally don't understand, this idea that man can and should play God, but it nonetheless seems to be a factor.
Well, that's assuming that they're implementing these programs in an attempt to, you know, do something that's for the great of the society. I don't believe that. You know, I don't think that they're sitting around a table going, how can we help people out in society? You know, I believe they're sitting around the table saying, how can we achieve our goals, which is, again, population reduction. It could be controlling the weather, and it could be creating global governance by, you know, creating droughts in countries that will not comply so that we can control them. So that's, you know, we have this this immense power in the hands of people that have very evil and selfish motives. And with that combined, you're going to have death and destruction, exactly what we're seeing. So it's very unfortunate.
I kind of get the impression that maybe they're just taking something and trying to blame the general population for things that they're not involved with, in the fact that there is global warming, man-made global warming, if they can control the weather.
Yeah, in that sense, I think it's like a false flag operation, like 911 and others, where you blame the wrong enemy. You put the blame on the wrong person and confuse everybody. With the global warming storyline, it's our fault for driving cars we have this climate catastrophe looming, and they're going to go in with the solution. But going back to what Michael said about the kind of the draconian motives, you know, as a scientist, I have to think that most of the climatology people, and there's not that many climatologists in the world, maybe 500 or 600, but there's a lot of physicists and there's a lot of engineers and there's a lot of others that want to jump on the gravy train because there's been a lot of money on this. I think most of the quote-unquote climate engineers would not have the kind of draconian motives that maybe the ruling elite would have. Let me just read a little bit out of an article called The Return of Dr. Strangelove. That's Edward Teller. The Politics of Climate Engineering as a Response to Global Warming by Clive Hamilton. And he says, in March 2010, a private meeting of leading climate engineers held in Asilomar, California, that's over in Pacific Grove, aimed to develop guidelines to govern research and testing. Those invited wanted a voluntary code of conduct that would forestall regulation by governments and the international community so that the experts could work unhindered at their task of understanding how to control the Earth's climate system. So I think a lot of these scientists, you know, who are getting grant money for this kind of work, they're not looking at the big picture, perhaps. They're thinking, oh, gosh, this will be fun. We can start to use the atmosphere as a laboratory, and we'll try this and we'll try that, and I'll be making a good salary, and, you know, it's kind of like going along to get along.
Well, I think so, you know, and I think that there's a lot of compartmentalization, meaning that a lot of people involved with these programs have no idea really what they're involved with and where the research is going. A lot of people, you know, want to kill these pilots that are up there spraying, and we don't have that message at all within the film. We're trying to reach out to these pilots because I believe that a lot of them have no idea really what they're involved with, and once they see the film, they will know what they're involved with and how damaging it is, and they will know that they're hurting their loved ones, that they're spraying toxic chemicals that essentially are killing their mother, their father, and possibly their children. So with that being said, you know, we're trying to reach out to everybody. However, I've reached out to all of the main geoengineers, Ken Caldera, David Keith. I spent over an hour and a half on the phone with him talking about these programs. He blatantly denied that there was any aerosol spraying, and he tried his hardest to convince me that what I was seeing was just simply contrails. I sourced my tests and even sent him a lot of tests, which he hasn't looked at. So he has no excuse. We've showed him a mountain of data, as well as many other geoengineers, and they're still denying this. Of course, they're getting millions of dollars in grants and funding. But I think, you know, to give some of them the benefit of the doubt, they probably don't all know that they're involved with something so devious and evil.
One of the things that I would like to ask is, we keep pointing our fingers at the military and the government when there's every bit as many reasons for a commercial entity to possibly flood out a competitor or pay for snow for a good ski season, which may affect a farmer for his farming operation. So, I mean, we want to point it in the one direction, but I think it's much more broader than that, since there is such.
It's not only government, military, but also corporations. Of course, they're all locked into the same entity. They're legally all corporations. So, yes, there is corporate involvement through, you know, in part involvement with the military and government. And also, you know, a global alliance with this. So you're looking at a lot of large multinational corporations such as GE, Raytheon, and the like, who are involved with these things. But yeah, there are smaller, you know, crowd-feeding companies that have been in business, and they're very public about it. You can look at, I think it's Weather Modification Incorporated, which is on the Internet, and they're very open about it. Of course, they claim that they're just spraying silver iodide, and maybe they are. But what we're talking about is definitely different. These are large-scale, global programs that have been implemented. There's literally evidence and toxins being found everywhere.
Now, Colorado has a Department of Weather Modification, correct? Are you aware of that? Did you hear me?
Who are you asking, Melody?
You, Michael.
I'm not sure. You know, we didn't get too much into weather modification within the film.
Well, according to Rosalind Peterson, who's got a website on this called California Sky Watch, and another one, AgricultureDefenseCoalition.com, she has been bugging the secretary at NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and has gotten, in recent years, lists of all the companies that are practicing weather modification. And there's about 80 of them right now. And there's no oversight or regulation by Congress. There is a bill going through the Senate, I believe, Senate Bill 601, sponsored by Kay Bailey Hutchison of Texas. And this bill apparently would not help solve the problem of oversight at all. It would more or less give the corporations a pass. And so she believes this bill should be opposed. Yeah, weather modification is your question about the office in Colorado is probably the correct. I'm not sure, but certainly there are many programs, and if there is such an office in Colorado, it's probably to facilitate them getting permits rather than trying to limit their activities. Although I'm not sure about that, I'm just speculating.
And one other thing that I wanted to bring up is possibly, say, you were in a watershed area, and if they had, and maybe there was a large water company that might be wanting to dominate an area, they could, you know, possibly influence whether there was a drought or whether we got...
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I think most of these weather modification schemes are in the West, where we have... dry conditions. We have more evaporation than we have precipitation on a given year. So in many areas, we have a desert. We have a problem because we have large cities in the desert. And I looked at some of these lists from NOAA that Rosalind gave me, and, you know, come to find out Little Turlock, where I live, has a Turlock Irrigation District has a weather modification program. PG&E, our electrical state electrical company, has weather modification. There's many, many companies that are doing these things, and these are probably not related to the chemtrails, I don't think. Would you say that they are or not related to the chemtrails, Michael?
Well, I think the answer is yes and no, because I think in part they are spraying aerosols onto the clouds. But what we're seeing, we're getting reports of KC-135s. As being in other jets, you know, at high levels spraying these aerosols in. So while I think that, you know, some of what we see could be these programs, there's a much broader and much larger program that's occurring with the KC-135s. And, of course, people have seen UN jets spraying, and then also corporate jets. There was we have a close-up, which we used in the film, of a jet spraying that had Cargolux, which is a German cargo company, on the side. So we have a nice close-up of the logo and the plane spraying. So, you know, I think some of what we see might be weather modification at a local level, but what's being done, obviously, is at a much larger scale and a global scale.
By the way, there is an address, 1313 Sherman Street in Denver, for Colorado weather modification. Now, what they do exactly, it's not really stating here, but I'm sure with a little more...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you, Melody. Could you speak up?
I'm saying there is a Department of Weather Modification in Denver at 1313 Sherman Street.
Okay.
So, and
yeah, you know, I've heard that China has some 30 or 40,000 climate engineers, and many of the weather modification companies do their business internationally. And some of them, you know, advertise that they can steer your hurricane away from your island or whatever, you know. So this technology is not only in the military, it's also in the private sector.
Michael, did you get into any of the Morgellons issue that's been bandied about a little bit by some of the other researchers?
Well, we mentioned it because we do believe that it merits research and definitely attention because Cliff Carnicom has done such a great job with it. However, our goal was a little different. What we were aiming for is to get the word out to the mass public because we believe about 90% of the public is unaware of these programs. And that means our 90% of the population that who many would do something if they knew about it but aren't doing anything because they're not aware of it. So we took a broader approach, and really the goal when I started this was to make people, A, aware that these programs are occurring, and B, they're a threat to both human health and ecology. And I think that we really did that. And we're hoping to open up the door to get people to research this more, look into it more deeply, and then also to get active within the movement. Once they find out that what's being sprayed is very toxic, is hurting them, then we're hoping that we can make some effective change. So with your question, in terms of for the market and the people who we are trying to wake up with this, Morgellons might be a little difficult for a lot of people to believe in. So we just mentioned it briefly in the film. You know, for a lot of people, believing that airplanes are spraying toxins in the sky to create artificial clouds is very difficult for them to believe. Going deeper than that, you know, we're concerned that we might turn some people away. So that's it. I would love to cover it in my next film and go more deeply once we get the mass awakening, which I think is going to occur with the film. And, yeah, I'd love to go more deeply into that.
Let me just mention that in a book called Corporatism, The Secret Government of the New World Order by a guy named Jeffrey Grupp, he has a section on Morgellons disease, and he defines it this way. Morgellons disease is the infestation of humans, insects, and animals by an ultra-high-tech nano-machine or hive-like fibrous nano-intelligence. Since Morgellons is a major global pandemic currently being studied by top university researchers, but is blacked out of the mass media and mocked by the FDA and CDC, this seems to indicate that the corporatists are behind it, since they are merely using their corporatist media to cover it up, as they have done with so many things. I think what's interesting here is that Morgellon seems to be some manifestation of nanotechnology. And the document called 2025, they call it 2025 for short, but it's, you know, owning the weather in 2025. They call for the use of nanotechnology in what they call smart clouds that can, you know, these little nano pieces or whatever they are, these little tiny units can communicate with each other and act in a coordinated manner. So in 1996, the concept was out there, and then the Air Force does a whole series of kind of futuristic scenarios of what the future might look like, and one of them really goes and develops that. So when I first heard about Morgellons disease, I thought, well, this is too weird. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to research that. I'm not going to read about that. It's yucky. It's hideous. It's unimaginable. It's unthinkable. And yet, in the 1996 document, Owning the Weather, in 2025, there's a discussion of these nanoparticles. So I think it's certainly. I'm not going to dismiss it anymore. I think it's perhaps real.
Well, yeah, definitely, and it definitely merits further research. It definitely does. I have met a few people that claim to have Morgellons, and I guess it's miserable. It feels like bugs are crawling under their skin, and they've been largely ignored up until now by the Western medical system, and a lot of people have thought to be losing their minds that have come in with these. However, there's a growing number of people around the globe that are having these symptoms, and deeply concerning to many of us who are aware of the chemtrail issue. I know that Clifford Carnicom has done just a mountain of research and great work within this issue. I can't speak too well about it because we didn't go in depth about it. So he would be a great source if you go onto the Carnicom website. Just a great source to look into this.
Yeah. Yeah.
But how do you, I mean, if they're willing to put aluminum and barium into the airstream, can you, is there anything about the depleted uranium? Is this something that could be released as well? Or, I mean, because we know that they're doing it in other manners, why would they stop there and not, you know, release it and get rid of it like they seem to do in a lot of other toxic materials?
Yeah, well, there's a lot that's being found. It's not only aluminum, barium, strontium. There have been many air tests. For instance, Arizona Skywatch did an air test to reveal heavy amounts of lead, arsenic, other toxins. So who knows what they're spraying up there, but what we really focused on, what we did to make this believable and to the unsuspecting public where this might be out of their realm of believing, we just took geoengineers' proposals, which were spraying aluminum, and matched it with what was being found. And that's very easy for most people to understand and to make that connection. But, yeah, we believe that they're spraying much more than just aluminum, barium, strontium. So there's a lot of other things that are being found into the sky. So,
do you find that there's certain times a year that there's various, that there's differences, or do they target certain weather fronts, or
do they do? Yes, in Northern California, we're up in Shasta County by Mount Shasta, and that's in the area where the jet stream, I believe, comes in, and they get hit very hard up there. Of course, they're seeing the mass forest die off. Francis Mangles, who is a retired USDA biologist, did a snow test on Mount Shasta. And I'll give you an example of how high it was. And the reason I'm bringing this up, yes, they're spraying extremely heavy over there. They believe it's because they're trying to get the particulate into the jet stream and disperse it into other parts of the country and the world. But Mount Shasta, as a baseline, about 7 years ago, they took a snow test before the real heavy snowing spraying occurred, and they found aluminum at 7 parts per billion. Last year, they took a snow test. Take a guess what that test elevated to in parts per billion of aluminum.
I couldn't even guess, but maybe Eric might have a better
answer. Oh, maybe a 1,000-fold increase?
Bigger than that, unfortunately, we wish it was only that. 61,100 parts per billion of aluminum. That's over 61 times the allowable amount in drinking water. It's toxic, and hikers are up there hiking, and they use that snow for hydration. They're drinking that snow. It's poison.
So what are the symptoms of this?
Well, it depends, you know, on a heavy spray day, a lot of people get headaches, nausea, brain fog, they can't think clearly, high blood pressure, heart palpitations, the list goes on and on and on, but aluminum-related illness, aluminum is a neurotoxin, so people experience memory loss, they experience over the long term, neurological disorders and diseases. Of course, we've seen those increase at hundreds of times over the past 10 years in correlation to when this sprain has been reported. So, a lot of really nasty symptoms.
Yeah, and as you say, Northern California has been hit with a lot of spraying, and many, biologists have noticed the dying off of trees. And plants and grasses and people like Dane Wiggins, who have tried to produce solar power, have noticed that the whitening of the clouds and the artificial clouds have made it very, very difficult for him to get much solar power. But I think that's of concern. But I think the dying plants and trees and these toxins in the water and the soil is a much greater concern. Here's an article by Alan Buckman on dying plants, persistent jet clouds, and the biorestoration alternative. And he's talking about observing in Northern California lots of sudden oak death, SOD, which is a fungus, and in Southern California, bark beetles or crop rot or any number of pathogens. But these but it is not the pathogens. It is the environmental stress that allows pathogens to invade. They are opportunistic distress, and this stress is being caused by shifting climate patterns and pollution from man's activities that have killed off the beneficial soil microbes and stopped the natural cleaning process and atmospheric restoration once they're provided. It's interesting, I got an email from a colleague of mine who's a professor of physical geography, and he was up in Colorado, and he said, gee, there's a lot of dead trees up here, some parts 90% of the forest dead, and he said he attributed it to global warming. And it's interesting and ironic that it could well be the spraying rather than the global warming.
Well, we think it is, and Deborah Whitman of Environmental Voices had noticed, and she also did a documentary called Skylines. She noticed the forest die-off, so she started testing the bark on the trees that were dying. And what she found was the trees that were dying, she was testing the white part that was on the bark, and, of course, she was finding very high amounts of aluminum and barium in those. So it appears that that those trees are dying as a direct result. Also, a lot of people blame that on the drought. They were seeing in Northern California were a lot of trees that actually had root systems in ponds and in streams that were dying as well. So that, again, I believe tested very high for the aluminum and the barium as well.
So this is killing off ecosystems.
Oh, yeah, it's killing off everything. It appears, you know, it looks to me like it's an attempt to kill off anything that's natural and organic, and then redesign with their GMO seeds and things that can be controlled by this, what I call the corporate beast.
So what we are looking at, perhaps, is an attempt at ecocide, complete destruction of the ecosystem.
Well, I think so, into something that's controllable under this new system, which we see emerging, which is not based on peace and love. It's based on the other, which is darkness and destruction. That's what they're trying for. They're trying to control what at one time was natural and organic.
Wow. there's no place to hide, is there? There's no place to go. One has to turn around and face this thing, and do something. Wouldn't you say? And of course, congratulations for doing what you're doing. Going to this meeting in Belgium and making the film are a big help. Has this become then a pretty big part of your activities then?
you could say that. Making a feature film is it usually takes over a year. And requires quite a bit of time. We did it in 7 months. Of course, it required about some days, 18-hour days, 7 days a week. So we really worked hard getting the interviews and post-production, if you want to do it right, and if you want to do it quality, it takes a long time as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's literally been my life. It's been breakfast, lunch, dinner, and sleep. And talk to my wife. I talk about chemtrails in the middle of the night. So, yeah, it's been a huge part of my life. I really don't think there's a greater issue at hand that needs to be addressed. I mean, we're under attack. To walk outside and not be able to breathe fresh air, not to be able to breathe something that's not loaded with toxins and loaded with metals is just disgusting. And people do need to stand up. You know, we filmed for a week on Maui. We're at an organic farm. On a remote part of the island, and they're starting to. It was great because for the first time in my life, I was able to eat off of the land. And we would wake up in the morning. We slept on a cliff and in this little grass hut, and all the people there they grow their own food. So it was literally all organic. So I'd wake up in the morning and I'd get some fruit from the tree, and that would be my breakfast. And then we'd grab some avocados and have that for lunch. And it was just a beautiful place to live because there was no corporate influence. There was no monetary needs there. We just lived off of the land. But they're concerned because things are starting to die off. They're starting to see weakening of their coconut trees, and they are spraying very heavy offshore, off of Maui. And we filmed there, and I left just completely grieved. I admired the way that the locals lived there, and I want to go back before it gets completely destroyed. But their concern, again, is that they will not be able to grow their own food, that everything may die off, and if they want to try and live like that, they may have to be dependent on these new GMO seeds from company XYZ. And what are the requirements for that? Now do they have to go and take a course and pass requirements and give up X amount of dollars to be able to grow this new GMO seed that can thrive in this new aluminum-rich environment? And that's really the end of freedom. It really is. And I'm very concerned about it, and that's what I left. You know, I left deeply grieved.
So your thesis then is that the corporations such as Monsanto that control the genetically modified organisms and the seeds with the Terminator gene, et cetera, are ready to step into the breach here when we've reached the point where nothing will grow except for GMOs that are aluminum resistant, and that they will then completely control the food supply and be able to decide who can eat and who doesn't.
I really believe that's the agenda. I believe with all of my heart. And they're locked and loaded, ready to move forward with this. They already have their GMO seed. So,
are you know for a fact that they have some GMO seeds that are aluminum resistant or something like that?
Yes, it was developed at Cornell University, and it's now owned by the Brazilian government and the USDA. And if you give me one second, I can pull up a patent number for you.
Why would the USDA be owning anything?
That's a good question. Perhaps they're involved with this domination, corporation.
Remember, Melody, we've interviewed Joan Vion and others who've talked about public-private partnerships. And the fact that the government is now a for-profit entity in partnership with the corporations. And certainly we see that in the patenting of life forms and the patenting of genes that are done sometimes by corporations, sometimes by our government. So our government is in partnership to make money with corporations.
Yep, absolutely. This patent number 075828, was awarded on September 1st, 2009.
Okay,
yeah.
just this is patent number 075828, which is granted in 2009 to the Brazilian government and the USDA. Is that correct?
Let me get you some. I'm looking through my emails right now while I have you on. I want to get you. And we do have it in the film. Bullet points. There we go. I found what I'm looking for. I'll get you numbers here. Give me one second, please.
So how many people, I mean, who are the names of some of the people that appear in your film when you get a chance to?
Well, Mariel Hemingway, who is an actress, or her husband Bobby Williams, who's a stuntman in Hollywood. Of course, I go around, I'm featured in it as the person that does the investigation. Dane Wigginton, who's up in Northern California, Francis, Mangles, USDA biologist, Dr. Lenny Stein, who is a metals expert. Who else did we interview? A number of people in Hawaii, Deborah Whitman of Environmental Voices. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. There are about 30 different people who we have interviewed.
Well, to go back to the previous issue, the patent number it was for a seed, for a plant that is resistant to aluminum, or is a particular crop, or what?
Well, they are in different crops, but I'm going to give you the patent number, aluminum-resistant gene, patent number 758-2809. Mm-hmm. It was granted on September 1st, 2009, and it was developed at Cornell University.
Yeah.
And it's assigned now to the U.S. DA and Brazilian Enterprise for Agricultural Research.
Okay, so this is a gene which can then be inserted into other, into any crop or any plant, and therefore render it resistant to aluminum then. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct. And I know that they already are using it in millet and some other crops right now.
I find that patent number rather short. Have they come up with some other classification with patent numbers?
You know, I'm not a patent expert on that. I don't know, but that is what we have found during our research. So,
yeah, who knows what their system is. But that's very, very interesting information, and it is compelling information in the sense that it fits into the larger scheme that you're outlining here. Do you have any idea of what kind of time scale or time frame our masters have put together for their takeover of the agricultural system? How long do you think it might take? If they've been spraying for 20 years and we're still here, are they planning on radically increasing the spraying now, or where do you think they are in the process?
Well, they already have radically increased it. However, we have here in California, we've seen a decline since probably June here. But I know I spoke with some people today who were over in Europe, and I was on another radio program where somebody from London had called in. They said that they were getting sprayed like roaches. So the programs have escalated. Who knows what I had spoken to Francis during our interview, and I said, you know, what's going to happen to the soils? We know that they're contaminated now, and we know that they're starting to see a die-off. And I said, if there's no more spraying, what is going to happen? Will this reverse? Will things continue to decline? He looked at me and said, you know, Murph, that I don't know. He said, I wish I knew. He said, it could take 20 years. It could take 2,000 years. It could take 200,000 years. So we simply do not know. So the damage, it appears, has already been done. We don't know if it's reversible. Perhaps they're targeting other areas more aggressively because they've done the damage or they've reached the goals that they have over here in this region. You know, we just don't know. There are a lot of questions, and we're hoping that we'll get some answers.
Well, and yet our farmers here in the Central Valley are still growing crops. So I don't think the entire agricultural system hasn't been destroyed here, has it?
No, not yet. But you know, there is a decline that's being reported. I'm well aware of that within certain crops that require an acidic soil that simply now have alkaline soils. So they are seeing a decline. And, you know, the spraying has really escalated in the past 5 years. I think it's been going on probably for about 15 years, you know, maybe a little bit 20 years ago, but really in the past 5 years, we've seen these programs escalate. So we just simply don't know. We do know one thing, that they're very damaging and that they are destroying things right now. So we don't know how long it's going to take to completely destroy, or, you know, there are just a lot of questions, but we know it's not good.
So what are the, did you test the water too, or the larger bodies of water?
Well, there a lot of scientists are starting to take rain tests because their proof is in the rain. And again, they're seeing massive amounts of aluminum, barium, and strontium in the rain. I know Dane Wigginton had a pond, and this is in the film as well, a lined pond that has no aluminum, that tested for no aluminum. After several heavy spray days, he had tested it, and his numbers were just off the chart with aluminum and barium. So, yes, waters have been tested, and then also some tributary arms, and again, the same very high levels.
Yeah, I just, to go back to this document, Weather as a Force Multiplier, Owning the Weather in 2025, this U.S. Air Force document, It in 1996, this document kind of outlined a timetable for introducing certain technologies. By 2000, they were supposed to introduce ionic, that is to say, in the ionosphere, mirrors with a sharp increase from 2008, and that's to, you know, redirect radio signals and radar and electromagnetic radiation elsewhere on the planet. 20 to 25 use chemicals for atmospheric seeding by civilian as well as military aviation. 2004 create smart clouds through nanotechnology with exponential increase after 2010. And 2005 introduce carbon black dust, and that can heat up an area by absorbing more terrestrial infrared radiation. So we have lots and lots of clues in the documents, that's for sure. It's really pretty overwhelming, isn't it, when you start looking at all this material.
What do you think would be in the carbon black dust?
Well, carbon black pretty well describes it.
I mean, what would be a source of something? Would that be like burnt something, or?
I'd have to look up the definition.
Okay.
I know they also have been using chaff, which is aluminum covered with fiberglass, and that's to block radar signals between the ground and the satellites. So some of this is going to be defensive military, and some of it's going to be offensive military. I think it's perhaps interesting to mention that in 1984 there was a video put out called "Soviet Weather Engineering Over North America" by what's the guy's name? Tom. It'll come to me. But anyway, his point was that the Soviets had been engineering our weather throughout the 70s and 80s until the Soviet Union fell apart. In other words, the Soviet Union was experimenting with Tesla technology, scalar technology, moving the jet stream around, doing all kinds of things. And so our government is not the only one that has these kinds of capacities. In 1997, I think our CIA director, I think his name was Colby at the time, said, look at our enemies are doing such and such and such and such, all these geoengineering things. So this stuff is serious, so we've got to look at it too. And so there was an implication that some of this is defensive in nature. Certainly that would be true, and of course a lot of it would be offensive in nature too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get into that much, Michael?
I think so, yeah. I think it's both offensive and defensive. At this point, my concern really is this new global government that we're seeing emerge and them getting the countries that are not conforming to the New World Order to get them to conform into this. I know you had mentioned Colby. I think I actually had read something, and I think you're correct about that quote. These things are very public. Or have been very public. They're not hidden. But again, they're not going to be on your corporate mainstream media blasted through CBS, NBC, or Fox News, CNN, or any of those deceptive mainstream, corporate mainstream media news outlets.
These quotes go back. Apparently Lyndon Johnson back in the 60s said, weather modification is going to make nuclear weapons look like, toys. It's going to be much more powerful than nuclear weapons. So the fact that this is off the radar screen for most of our citizens, I think, is alarming, because we're dealing with tremendous potential. Nikola Tesla talked about his death ray, in which he said he could destroy, airplane engines from 250 miles away by interfering different wavelengths of electromagnetic radiation. And, some would say that probably these kinds of things have been militarized 100 years later, although for most of that intervening period, most of the public did not know about this kind of technology. Now, I remembered the guy who put together that video about Soviet weather engineering. It's Tom Bearden.
All right.
So he's a guy who's talked about this alternative physics, which most people are not taught in high school and college, the scalar physics, the Tesla-type physics, a whole series of realities that most of us are not aware of at all.
Well, if you're talking about chaff being something that's got aluminum with fiberglass, and
yeah.
then you're talking about respiratory diseases, I mean, I would figure that had a huge effect on people's respiratory.
Melody, respiratory mortality has gone from number 8 on the list of mortality down to number 3 in the past 5 years.
Wow, that's huge.
That's a huge jump. And we believe it's in direct correlation to these programs. Of course, we're seeing asthma and all kinds of other things. If the public would simply wake up to this and start questioning and realize, huh, that's why my child probably has asthma. That's why my father died from respiratory illness, you know, because he was getting attacked by these programs because they're spraying toxins into the sky. If people really knew the capacity and the dangers and what was being done, there would be a revolution tomorrow. People would be out in the streets. And that's what we're hoping to do.
And one of the things that I've observed with your respiratory disorders, that the advancements have been so little since probably the late 80s that there's been very few medications or anything out there to just help alleviate the symptoms.
Can you speak up, Melody?
There's been very few advancements in the upper respiratory arena since the late 80s for people, and it's as though they've, you know, found something to alleviate symptoms, but of course nothing to really help them out. And then you have throwing this kind of thing in the air also leads to making you wonder what's behind it all.
Well, life and health is not the agenda. That's not what benefits the select few that, again, call themselves the elite. They profit on death. They profit on a whole bunch of things that are not in your best interest or mine.
So what do you plan on, I mean, if this goes over well, you're saying you're going to make going to plan on doing a follow-up film?
Well, I think so. We've gotten a tremendous amount of support for this film. It's being requested internationally. Alex Jones with InfoWars is partnering with us in distribution. So we're definitely, it's going to be seen by millions. We know that. There's already been an incredible response, and yet the film's not out yet. So we've pre-sold several copies. The people who are aware in the movement are simply waiting for this film to come out. So, yeah, we're anticipating, we've already gotten, this has gotten much more attention than I had ever anticipated. And, you know, I believe that my steps are ordered from God because I could not have done this alone. So, yeah, we think that this is going to wake a whole bunch of people up and hopefully open up doors to go a little deeper into this issue about some of the issues such as Morgellons, weather modification, and other related topics with this, because I think it needs to be addressed, and I want to continue on.
That's great. Well, I just for some of our listeners who might be now frightened of the damaging health effects of what we're talking about, there is that Carnicom.com video on chemtrails. He has a section where Katie Couric, who was a news anchor at some mainstream news show, has I guess retired from that, and now she's a naturopathic health consultant, and she talks for about I guess a half an hour about what supplements people can take to at least mitigate some of the symptoms that accompany some of these chemicals. So I guess if people are, you know, scared, which probably would be a good first step, that's one thing that they can do to learn how to protect themselves and the people that they know and love.
Yeah, absolutely. There are measures that you can take. And I urge everybody to get into an all-organic diet. Do not inundate your body with extra chemicals, because that will put a strain on your body. You know, I learned up north where they're being sprayed very heavy, just about everybody is sick in that area and they can't shake the respiratory illness, even people who are on organic. So my advice would be, A, get a hair follicle test and see how high your aluminum levels are, my guess, I could almost guarantee they're going to be through the roof because of these programs. And then B, start chelating the aluminum and other toxins out of your body. You can get a product called bentonite, and then also DE, diatomologist earth, I believe I may have said it wrong.
Diatomaceous.
There you go, diatomaceous. I always say it wrong every time.
I believe that's the same thing, Michael, as bentonite. It's a clay. It would be the same product with different names. And that, as you say, it would adsorb the aluminum help it pass through your system.
You got it. And then strengthen your immune system. You know, take vitamins, greens products. Vitamin D is very important because we don't have the sunlight that we did just 5 or 10 years ago. So your body does need that vitamin D3. So I would suggest taking that. And, take the appropriate steps and measures needed to strengthen your immune system. You're going to need it. There's an attack on it. There's no question about that.
What about people in trying to protect their land that they're growing their crops on? Have you heard anything about any methods for them to minimize the stress on the plants and to chelate or find a way to reverse those kind of effects from those heavy metals?
Growing awareness and addressing this to our public officials, lawsuits, everything else, whatever you can think of, you know, we need to do that because, no, unfortunately, we can't control what falls on our land. We can't control what we're breathing in, and we know that it's very toxic.
Well,
it's interesting, Michael. I think you really have hit upon perhaps, as you say, perhaps the major issue. And we have on this show with Melody's Truth Quest with Melody, we've tackled some pretty big ones, including 911 and water issues, etc. And we've tackled the global warming issue quite a bit, thinking that maybe that was the big one because that would potentially scale back the industrial civilized world back to the level of pre-industrial age by limiting use of energy. This seems maybe a little more in your face, a little more of a direct threat than the legislation. Although I think that the problem that we face is that there seems to be a full court press on. There seem to be many lines of attack by the ruling elite against the people. And it's hard to know where to put your energies for that reason. It's easy to get distracted and move in too many directions.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, my advice to everybody is really look inside, search your heart. We're definitely under attack, but see, you know, use your skills, whatever they are, into the area that you feel led, and go ahead and address this. I started, you know, this film just on a borrowed camera, and I ran up and started investigating this, and I was fortunate enough to have, some famous people and some very good filmmakers partner with me on this, and we have a feature film that is going to be seen by millions of people. With that, we're excited because millions of people are going to wake up to this issue, and God, we hope that it will create a revolution because we do need to stop. It is so damaging.
Well, I want to thank both of you gentlemen for coming on the program. And do you have any closing comments, Eric and Michael?
Well,
Murphy?
I sure appreciated the chance to talk with Michael and learn about what he's learned. And I'm very anxious to order the video, the DVD he just made. And I look forward to perhaps showing it to my class. I'm at the point now where for the first time, I feel like I can and should talk about this sort of thing to my classes. I think showing a video like this will be very educational and perhaps the best way to educate them. So I'm really looking forward to it. And thanks so much, Michael, for taking the time to join us.
Yeah, thank you again. And the trailer can be seen if you type in YouTube, what in the world are they spraying? You'll see many trailers related to the film. And you can purchase a copy on Reality Zone or InfoWars Store. They're available now. I want to thank you for having me on.
Okay.
And also.
And what?
And also for covering this oh-so-important issue.
Okay. Well, again, I want to thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night.
And that was Michael Murphy and Dr. Carlstrom. And Michael Murphy made the film What in the World Are They Spraying? And this is KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado. And we again, our program is archived at www.givemesometruth.info. And we are streamed on the Internet at khen.org.